Welcome to the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. I'm your host, Lee Ban Osman. Got a lot of good feedback on the mailback episode we did, and I appreciate y'all for the questions, the fun conversation. I think I might do one every month now. Just sit down, talk to y'all. We'll see. Hit me up on IG at the Canadian Basketball Show. Get ahead, send us some questions, and we'll get to it. But to end off the year, I want to talk more about the Canadian basketball prep school scene. What is going right? What is going wrong? What is the state of prep school basketball in Canada right now? And I wanted to have someone that has been consumed in all of it, heavily involved. He helped build Fort Erie International Academy into one of the top programs in Canada and North America, and is now the commissioner of the National Preparatory Association. My guy, Cav, how you doing, brother?
Good, man. How you doing? I appreciate you having me on today.
My guy, I'm good, man. Appreciate you coming downtown. Like I just said, commish of the NPA. How did that role come about and what made you interested? Because you were just at Fort Erie, building the program up, you know, for a few years over there. Grind session, made it to the finals, Final Four, I believe, or the finals. Was finals, the finals?
Yeah,
finals. Like first men's team to do it. But now you go out to NPA. Tell me about that role and how did that come about?
Yeah, so that role is very interesting how it came about. So, you know, obviously us being one of the members in the MPA and, you know, since the league started post-COVID, they haven't had a commissioner. The last commissioner was Jason Tom, who's now the director of operations for the CEBL. So I've always had conversations with Tariq being a stakeholder in the league saying like, man, we need this role. Like, and I've recommended people for this role as well. So when the time came and I left Fort Erie, T and I kind of got on the phone, we chopped it up and the idea came up of me kind of taking the position over. And it was an opportunity that was interesting because it's a completely different chair to be sitting in, compared to where I was before, you know, being a stakeholder to now dealing with all the stakeholders. So it was honestly just a natural conversation that came up, with T because of the relationship that we had.
What does your role look like since the start of the season, prep season? What does that look like in terms of just running things over at NPA?
Yeah, so a lot of it for me coming into this role right now has been opening up my network to all the stakeholders, so all the different teams. You know, obviously being at Fort Erie, we have a wealth of like phone numbers from college coaches from all levels. So being able to provide that to the different schools, call these different NCAA schools about our guys that are in the league that they might have no idea about. And honestly, just giving these programs more of an exposure, but also giving them some tools to become more, you know, stable programs within the country so that there's a continuous infrastructure to continue helping the next wave kids.
I see what you guys did at Fort Erie, man. The talent at the Battle of Fort tournament. I don't think I've seen that many NCAA coaches in Canada in a minute. Obviously, like right next to the Buffalo border, inviting them out there, all of them getting to watch you guys play your talent. But for people that who know your name, but they don't know your origin story in terms of the prep school scene, how did you first get involved and what originally like pulled you to the prep scene?
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty interesting story with a lot of luck. So I got to know Dwayne Washington back in 2020, just during that COVID time. So I was a part of Uplay for a little bit. You know, that first summer after Uplay, you know, he kind of took on Royal Crown. So I jumped on board at Royal Crown with him for about a year. Then we left Royal Crown. Charles found Fort Erie. And then he kind of gave me a ring and was like, yo, do you want to come with? And I was like, sure. So I've been at Fort Erie now I did 4 years there. So long story short, that's kind of how that story came about. A lot of luck, a lot of meeting the right people at the right time.
How has your like perspective changed? Like since joining in maybe the prep school scene, seeing how it's kind of like evolved over the years and now like taking on this important role?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot. I think, you know, the biggest misconception that people have is winning is what's most important for a prep program. I think like the thing that we kept rooted at Fort Erie was that development was always number one. That's how we were able to always recruit the top kids. We were able to get guys who were never on radars to certain levels just because of the fact that we pushed development more than anything. And there's a lot of programs that push winning over everything. And then you can see a lot of those programs also don't push kids out at the same level. You know, they might be stacking the championships and winning these, you know, circuits here and there, wherever. But at the end of the day, the foundation of a program should be how much are we changing the lives of the kids that we have with us, right? So we were able to kind of keep that foundation with us. And I think that's kind of what changed for me going into it. I thought it was always about winning and, you know, getting your name out of there. But the real thing is you develop guys, you get them to the right level, your name gets out there for sure.
Talking about guys like Ishan Sharma, I'm watching him at St. Louis. We had him on the podcast. Shout out to you. had him on the podcast. He's killing it at St. Louis doing his thing now. Yeah, it's cool to see what you guys have done. But what's been like when we're talking about the prep school scene now, like on this episode, I kind of want to talk about like, what's the state? What's going right? What's going wrong? How would you describe like the state of prep school basketball right now, Ken? Are we in a good place? Because I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a good spot in terms of the accessibility that kids have to play at that level that they want to play at. Now, what might be a driving factor for people to say like it's going wrong is like, you know, the fact that we're overselling certain things, right? The reality needs to hit in terms of there's only a certain level of scholarships out there if you want to go play down south. And I think that's what's being misconstrued by a lot of people is that they think it's endless because they see it on social media and just assume that it's an endless, like the NCAA, the average age is 21 years old. Like we got to be realistic here. Like a lot of our kids aren't going to get that opportunity coming out of high school. So what's going to be that next stage? And I think that's what's important, that a lot of schools just need to preach about getting an opportunity to play post-secondary basketball. That doesn't matter what level it is. But I think we're in a good state just because, yeah, the amount of prep schools we have, it seems like a lot. And yeah, there are people that are doing it in a different way, but there are a lot of people that are doing it in the right way too.
What are your thoughts on that? So many programs. I can't count. I've lost count. I'll see some like makeshift programs, mom and pop shop type programs. Like, what are your thoughts on like, are there too many prep school programs in Canada?
I think honestly, like you have to have a good sense as like a student athlete or a parent that's driving your kid into a program, right? Like, where did this program start? How did it start? Who's running it? Like, these are questions that you should be asking rather than, I just want my kid out of prep school. Like that doesn't do anything for anyone. You know, like there's a lot of prep schools that pop up because there's unhappy parents. You know, okay, my kid's sitting on the bench. So you know what? I'm going to start one too. Like this is the state that we're in. And those are the things I mean is like, it's not good for basketball because at the end of the day, those aren't driving factors to help these kids past what we're trying to do, right? But there are a lot of schools that, like I said, do it right, that have a solid foundation, have the right people in the right places that are carrying it on, right? So those are the teams that we have a part of the MPA that show us that there's a solid foundation, a solid infrastructure to help these kids past, you know, past the four lines, basically.
Yeah, MPA started, what, like 6-7 years ago? I consider it like, I think you guys might be the Premier League. You're probably sitting now as a commissioner, you know? Like, what makes it stand out in your eyes, the MPA?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, like for me, the biggest thing is, and you know, you could fact check this, is that when we were at Fort Erie, we took a stance to, you know, leave one league and join just the MPA. And that was because of the value that we've seen in the MPA, which is, in my opinion, three things. One, the marketing component of it, how they market the athletes. The second piece is the scouting component of it, which that's who they are traditionally. They are a scouting platform. And the third is the league, which allows these players a platform to be on. So I think from that standpoint, we hit a lot of programs with three different factors on it. So us leaving Fort Erie, leaving initially and joining the MPA was because that was something that we believed in, right? It wasn't just a league. It wasn't just a place for us to play home games and away games and that's it. Like it gives our kids, it gives our program more visibility, and that helps both parties, including the country.
Yeah. How much did it help your guys, your players, just in terms of like whether it's recruitment, talent, coaches coming out to games? You talking about the marketing. You guys are killing on IG. I'll give you that too. It's like the IG marketing, man. I'm like the graphics, the top five scores, top five assists. You know, like it's, I've never seen that type of, I don't know. But I'm also like questioning, like, how many leagues are there really in Canada, right? Where it's like, but you guys are like unprecedented what you guys are doing.
Yeah, there's quite a few leagues. Don't get me wrong. There? That's where you know the mom and pop, the prep schools are in. But like I said, the standard that we have through the team that's at MPA, that's what gives it the difference, right? Like when I was at Fort Erie, the value I seen was the ability to pick up the phone and call Joe and be like, yo, I need so-and-so's number. Can you get it for me? Because I know they're looking for a big. You know, when we were in MPA finals 2 years ago, Tarek's personal relationship with Kansas State is what brought Jerome Tang into the gym. Like we're talking about a Big 12 head coach walking in to a school in St. Catharines, like Ridley College.
Never thought I'd see that.
Never thought you'd ever see that, right? So the reach that they have because of how long they've existed is unprecedented in this country. And that's where people need to understand the value that the so-called league brings to the table is that it's more than just a league.
Yeah. You talk about it, it's been long, but it hasn't really been long too, right? 6-7 years being able to have those connections is kind of crazy. But do you feel like prep school basketball, like in Canada, is getting respect in terms of just like, maybe not just in Canada, but just down south? Like when you guys are playing against competition, it's like, okay, we can't sleep on this Canadian team that's coming out. And we'll talk about what you guys did at 4E in a bit, but like, do you feel like there's more respect, legitimacy when it comes to prep school in Canada?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, my time at Fort Erie, like being in the grind session, for instance, like, you know, when we'd walk into gyms, when Royal Crown would walk into gyms, like there's a level of respect that the American teams have because they know like these kids are coached. You know what I mean? Like these aren't just athletes that are walking in and we're just going to blow them out. Like these kids are coached. They're going to play fundamental basketball with us. They're going to run plays. They're going to run and gun. They're going to show us everything, a cross blend of European and American basketball together. And I think that's the level of respect we get. Now, you know, you do walk into odd venues where people don't know who you are, and that's normal. But I think like as far as America, I think Canadian schools for the most part have established themselves as to like, this is not going to be a walk in the park. Like this is going to be a competition.
Yeah. For yourself, obviously joining Charles at Fort Erie, walk me through the process in terms of like building a program that becomes like respectable across North America, traveling, getting into the grind session, these main competitions where you're going up against guys that are in the league right now, you know, guys that are right now considered might be 2-3 going number one in the next, this draft class, AJ DeBanza, Darren Peterson, like those guys, right? Like, competing. And y'all beat AJ last year. Twice. We'll talk about that in a bit. Twice, not once, twice. You have to fact check me on that 100%. But walk me through, the idea comes to build Fort Erie, right? Charles hits you up. What does the groundwork look like to even get a start? And like not, like you talk about, there's so many mom and pop shops, but to build it to a program where it's like, you know, you're getting Leonard Miller to come. You're getting tons of NCAA guys that are going there, you know, like guys that have potential, like you're recruiting. Everyone's like, I want to go play at either, I think the schools that people want to play at, let's be real, it's either Fort Erie, Royal Crown, or it's, I don't know what, Crestwood is also a school that's coming up. That's kind of like, that's been in the mix. What other schools?
Edge Prep is now getting up there too.
Edge Prep, yeah. Alberta, shout out to them. They have a lot of talent.
RNS is pushing out D1 guys now.
Yeah. So like there's a lot of, but you guys were kind of like the one school I feel like there's a lot of talent coming out of. Tell me about that. Just like, what was the process in getting it started?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Charles kind of, definitely hit the hardest part, which is finding the school that had, you know, residents on site. Now, the school itself put in a lot of money too, to do all the investments for us, you know, renovating the gym, travel costs, our salaries, all that kind of stuff. Outside of that, man, like when it comes to the kids coming to us, I think that's all personal relationships. Like what a lot of people don't understand is like our first year, like 13 out of the 14 kids we had were personal relationships. You know what I mean? So Charles coached like Elijah, E-Man, Leonard. So there's an existing relationship
family
there.
Tree.
It's a family tree. You know, we had Isaac Jack, who we coached, you know, during the summer with Uplay. So we have good relationships with Uplay and we have great relationships with Brookwood. So they feel comfortable in terms of sending kids to us because they know, okay, Charles is a great guy. He's going to coach. He's going to develop these guys. Cav's a great guy. He's going to make sure he takes care of them off the court and everything. So putting that together, they know this is a place where I can trust for my kids to go. They're going to blossom and I get them back in the summer. It's going to be like a full circle to help them get recruited, right? And that's where I think it all took a change for us is that first year is like every single kid came to us because it was us, right? Like if you looked at the state of the gym when these guys got dropped off, like you'd laugh. Like if you were a parent, you'd tell your kid, pack your stuff up. Like we're going home. There's no way you're staying here. But I think that trust factor that these people had in us is what led us to become a great program. And then from there, it was just building on top of that, right? Like using those relationships to bring more kids in. Now, you know, you get guys like Braden, Ish, Oliver, Diego, these guys who have been flying under the radar for their middle school career, grade 9, grade 10, they come to us. Now they're popping off on the national team. They're going on AAU circuits. They're killing it. So other kids are like, yo, like this is a kid we didn't even hear about 2 years ago. Like, where is this guy coming from? Right. I think the biggest thing is that we had that core group for about 3-4 years, right? Look at guys like Jaden Clayton, who was down south. I've known Jaden since he was like grade 9, I think, grade 10. Charles known Jaden since he was in grade 8. So for us, it was a matter of like picking up the phone. We get on the phone with Junior. This is what we have to offer. We're looking for a point guard. Like we need this right now. He comes and watches a game when we were playing United Scholastic down in Durham. And he's like, yeah, you know what? We're going to transfer him and he's going to come. And that's a kid that's bouncing back from one of the top schools in the States, Dream City Christian, and coming back to us. Right. So it just honestly depends on the platform, the relationships, and then what we're able to do for the kid. Ultimately,
what do you think it meant for you guys? Like you said, not beat AJ DeBonso once, twice Utah prep in the grind session. What did it mean? Maybe for Canada.
I mean, I think it's a great thing for Canada. I think the first one, obviously, you know, it was, you know, they played in Canada. So, you know, the Canadian refs helped them out. The crowd was on their side, blah, blah, blah. And it was a tight game, man. Listen, like our guys played like dogs that year, right? But then it's completely different to go down now to Utah and playing them basically in their own state and beating them. And I think that's what was the difference maker is like, okay, yeah, we did it on our soil, but we're also doing it on your soil too. And kudos to AJ, man. Like this kid is unbelievable. Like he has he guards the best guy on the team. He doesn't even care. Like I remember plays where I sat back and I'm just like, this is like unbelievable what this kid is able to do in a span of 32 minutes or 40 minutes.
Yeah, you talked about it too, obviously going down to the States. Is there something you feel like maybe Canadians still lag in terms of like what the US is providing in terms of like their basketball scene? Is there something that Canada still misses?
Honestly, I think it's the competitiveness. I think like the way some of these coaches are coaching these kids, the way some of these programs are handling these kids, like we're not holding them accountable for them to face what they're going to face in the US. And that's the mistake we make. And that's like, we're not less talented. Like there's no way we're less talented. Like I said to you before, like we have the second most amount of players in the NBA as a nation. So it's not a matter of talent. It's a matter of like competitiveness. Like these kids assume that it's easy to go D1. It's assume that it's easy to play U sports. Like these are hard, hard things. Like if you look at the U sport landscape right now and see like how many prep players are in it, man, it has to be under like 25 or 30 in Ontario. Right. And what I'm trying to explain to all these people is like, it's hard. It's hard playing at that next level. And it's not talent. It's how hard are you willing to work? How hard are you willing to compete?
Yeah. I just had Dave DeVere on, TMU coach. He had a lot of thoughts on U Sports. A lot of thoughts in terms of like, it's lagging in terms of like, I don't the league is not where it should be considering like, I don't know, maybe like 6-7 years ago or maybe 8 years ago, they had a lot of guys that would go pro. And now it's not the same in terms of the competitiveness. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe seeing it. And you mentioned this, if prep school players that are playing at a high level in Canada are struggling to get in the league, why isn't the league so competitive?
Well, I think a lot of kids are still deciding to go down south and still pursue that dream. And this is where, as a stakeholder in this country, in the basketball space, and as well as someone that cares for kids, like you should ask some of these kids. I'm pretty brutally honest with them. Like when I know a kid is like a for sure U sports guy, can be an all Canadian, whatever. Like why spend 2 years at JUCO? Right. And then if you're going to bounce back and play Canadian basketball anyways, you're losing 2 years of education. The pipeline has changed now where like U sports is becoming a breeding ground for Division I basketball players. So you can come to U sports, kill it. If you're a killer, come kill it. And that's what's going to make the league better. And I think we're going to see that trend in the next 2 to 5 years where, like, it's what Dave is saying. Like, it's going to go back to it being competitive where, like, gyms are going to be back in the day, like, when, I don't know, Ryerson, Carlton,
packed.
UBC. Like,
I go to games now. It's not that packed, which is kind of sad, you know? I think about, like, the days where I'm watching, like, the Scrub Brothers.
Scrubs.
Doing their thing, you know? Yeah, like, yeah. But it's different. Like, and I don't know, too, just, like, I would go to games and, like, I'm watching, I was complaining about this on a mailbag episode I just did, like, just watching Canada versus the Bahamas in World Cup qualifiers. And the Miami Athletics, not that packed. Like, I don't know what's wrong with our basketball culture where it's like, youth sports used to be packed. I would assume some of these other Canada games used to be more packed. But also, I would think that, like, if you go to a Halifax, they're selling out. If you go to, like, a Alberta, Edmonton, like, Calgary, those areas, right? They'll sell out. But what's, like, is there something wrong with, like, the Toronto basketball culture? You know what? I have a theory. I might throw this out to you, you know? I don't blame you specifically, but, you know, like, the prep schools that are all going outside the city that has ruined the basketball culture in Toronto, outside of the Raptors. The Raptors still, you know, they still get crowds, even though I don't think they're that great this year. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you think that could be a factor to where it's like now there's so many prep schools outside of Toronto that, like, the basketball culture in the city isn't the same? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, let's be honest, like, when you and I are growing up, inner city basketball is a huge thing. Where is inner city basketball today? Doesn't exist.
There's, like, one prep school maybe in the city. That's Uchenna. And I can't even figure out where the address is to that. Shout out to where Russell though, but yeah, like, yeah. You know, like, It's hard to, you know,
right.
Go, I think it's in DuPont, somewhere in DuPont. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's not, you know, like, it's not talked about, which is sad.
I think it's a level of, like, the community outreach as well, right? Like, what are programs doing to get it out there? What are programs doing? Like, we live in an era of social media. Like, you got to engage your community. And if you're not on that platform promoting your games, whatever, like, it's tough. It's tough. Like, when Fort Erie used to come out to Toronto, man, I would call everyone that I know in the city. Be like, yo, this is our schedule. We're coming out to Vaughan. We're coming out to here. We're coming there. We're coming to Crestwood. We're coming to Royal Crown. Gyms would be rammed. But what are programs doing now to continue that message? Like, people are coming to watch me. By coming to watch me, they're coming to watch Ish. They're coming to watch Leonard. They're coming to watch JC. They're coming to watch Diego. Like, everyone, you know what I mean? So there's a sense of community around that. We used to have people, like, when we played Crestwood, the crowd would be split blue and red. Like, where is that?
Yeah, I still think when you guys, when Fort Erie would play Crown, like, that's the greatest basketball high school environment I would ever see. Like, that, you know? Like, everyone and their mom's pulling up to that game, you know?
For sure.
Like, I'm just worried about the basketball team in Toronto. It's interesting just to think about it, too. I'm also just looking at this stat, too. Obviously, we're talking about, there's a lot of talent in Canada, right? But FIBA came out with the world rankings. I don't know if you saw this. I want to get your thoughts on this. USA is number one. Spain's number two. Italy's number three. Four is number France. If you're listening to this, Canada's not coming anytime soon. Just wait for it. Serbia is number five. Lithuania is number six. Turkey, Istanbul. I want to go there one day. I might need to work on my lineup, you know? Turkey's number seven. Australia's number eight. Germany, I feel like, should be higher. They are number nine. And then Canada is number 10. What are your thoughts on this ranking in terms of boys basketball, FIBA? Obviously, this is more of like a Canada basketball ranking, right? But what are your thoughts? You think
Canada basketball made that ranking?
No, this is FIBA basketball ranking. But do you think this ranking is, does it represent the talent in Canada at the age group level? So what are your thoughts?
Definitely not. I mean, we're definitely not getting our best kids to play. That's first and foremost. You're going to get me in a lot of trouble with this question right here. But, you know, the views are my own, not with any association that I'm with. you know, the best kids are definitely not playing. Those reasons can be for various things, you know, coaching, availability, et cetera. I think the biggest thing for these kids is, like, they're playing way too many games. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, like, I mean, you know what? We OD'd when we were in Fort Erie too. Like, we had one season where we played almost 60 games in a season.
Wow.
And NBA then
type of.
And then these guys are going to play AAU right after. And then during AAU, they're going out to play for the national team as well. So, you know, that turns a lot of kids away as well, right? Like, they prioritize AAU to get a scholarship over the national team. So there are some kids that, you know, are at that level that possibly when they get to the U18, U19 level might not be available to get out there. So, you know, it really depends on what age group this ranking is for. But I think ultimately, like, we as a country, you know, Canada Basketball as an organization, we got to get together in terms of making sure that the best kids are available and we're not, you know, trying to get into any other involvements.
Yeah, I think this might be under 19. December 13 is when they release this. I just forgot about this, but I was like, I just searched it up and I found it. And I was like, this is interesting just because I'm like, I don't think, like you mentioned, Canada has the second most NBA guys in the league. Even though this is an age group ranking for the boys, I would assume, I think the girls, shout out to the girls, I think they're like third, I believe, or like they're in that top range. But like you mentioned too, like some people prioritize AAU over playing for the national team. Like, do you think, like that's been a culture, I feel like, for years. It's not just like the most recent years, like people are deciding to do that. Why do you think that culture has kind of stuck in terms of like, okay, I want to rather do this? Cause like also, like I'll talk to guys and it's like, my key is like, and also these AAU coaches, like they're prior, like what they're thinking is I have to get my guy a scholarship, you know? But I also would argue sometimes like you could get a scholarship playing for Canada basketball, you know, like some coaches still go out to there. What are your thoughts on that? Just like on AAU, but also like that, all the coaches are out there too, right? AAU, right? They're all sitting in the front court.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I'll go back a little. So when it comes to the U18, U19 level, it's a little bit different because the FIBA stuff directly interferes with AAU. Like it happens literally at the same time. Like for, let's say the Nike circuit, for instance, from personal experience, like there's like a 2-day gap from when these guys land in Augusta to when their games start for Peace Jam. You know, now you're coming back from playing whatever, 6 games in 5 days or whatever it is. And then time change, travel, and then you're expected to play 2 games a day going into AAU for the next 9 days. Like, no kid. I mean, if I had a kid, I'm not signing him up for that. When it comes to the AAU over national team in terms of recruitment, I would kind of have to disagree just because there's what, 364 Division I programs. A lot of these schools don't have budgets to fly out to Munich and Zurich and all these places, like wherever these national programs, their venues are. So you're only getting high major schools to come out. And really and truly, like how many high major kids are we pushing out as a country now with the portal and everything? Maybe one a year, maybe two.
How has the portal impacted things from your point of view?
Man, the average age in the NCAA is 21 years old right now. It's crazy. Like as a freshman, you're walking into certain environments. And this is where I give kids the personal advice. You think you're a high major guy? Go mid major. Think you're a mid major guy? Go low major. Like drop a level, because walking into a program as an 18-year-old at Kansas, you're not playing. Like there's no way, right? Like, and by the time these schools are seeing Canadians in a lot of these programs that necessarily aren't providing a lot of exposure, like you're going onto the roster as the 11th, 12th, 13th guy. So, and I told you before the podcast started, like these coaches are watching rosters right now. Like if I'm a mid-major program, I'm looking at a high major program and going, who's the last 4 guys that don't touch the court that I think can come here and play at least 10 minutes for me? Like that's where it's at right now. And they're calling me, they're calling Joe, they're calling Wes, like all these scouts, you know, Michael Torres, all these guys, and just being like, so who do you think is going to go in the portal next year? What U Sports guys should we be looking at? Like, these are the questions. And then it's like, oh, like what high school guys are flying under the radar, right? So this is where it comes back to programs prioritizing development and exposure and the right type of exposure. You don't go to like every single event. Like go to the right ones that are going to provide the right opportunity for these kids. And, you know, ultimately they'll get something.
Yeah. You're talking about high school players going under the radar. I got a name for you, but we'll discuss about it afterwards. Yeah. When you're having conversations with guys, you're telling me, hey, if you think you're a high major, go mid major. If you're mid major, if you think you are, go low major. What is their thoughts on that? Because like they're also probably thinking like, no, like I want to play at the highest level. I want to play for the name brand school. You know, I want to play for the Kansas. You know what I'm saying? Like, but they don't realize that like you go there, you're likely rotting on the bench.
Yeah.
What's the message? What's the perception? Are kids now seeing the landscape and being like, wow, you know what? Is there more of an understanding compared to maybe it was a few years back? Or is it still like, they're kids at the end of the day, right?
They're kids. Social media makes everything look easy. Again, like, you know, you're looking at guys and you're like, oh, I could do that too. It's not that easy. Like, it's going to be a reality check for a lot of these guys. I'll give you a personal example. Like Ish, like that's my guy. This is a kid that committed to a high major school. And, you know, at the time it was the right school for him. Like, he had the right coach that wanted him. There was an unfortunate change that happened as soon as he got down there. It is what it is. He doesn't play that much. He, quote unquote, drops a level to a mid-major program, solid conference, great coach. And now he's playing 25 minutes a game across the line, right? He's doing what he's great at, shooting the ball. He's doing what he's great at, rebounding. Like, he's thriving in that environment. And that's what it should be at the end of the day. Like, man, do I want to go to a high-major program and sit on the bench miserably? But it's going to be a reality check for a lot of these kids because, you know, so-and-so coach from high major program is recruiting him. So they think, oh, I'm going to go be the star. But he's actually recruiting you for the 12th spot to be on the scout team. And then reality hits. You're like, oh, man, I went from playing 40 minutes a game in high school to not even, like, getting out of my warm-up.
Yeah. Is that, like, one of the worst calls you get from a kid being like, Gav, you're probably right about this situation? Or, like, what's that like when a kid calls you up and it's like, I'm not playing. It's not what I imagined.
Right.
What's that feeling like knowing that, like, I don't know, maybe you try to warn them, maybe you try to tell them, like, this is the reality of things. Like, what do those conversations look like? And obviously you feel for the kid, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those moments you want to tell them, I told you so, but it's also like, you know, you're someone that the kid is calling when he's down. Right. So like we have a situation right now with one of our kids personally, you know, he's going like facing this. And it's like, okay, well, like, what are you doing that you can actually control, right? Like, okay, like, you're a Division I player. Everyone knows that. Are you going to go down to a different program afterwards? Most likely, if you decide to leave, you are going to go to a different program. But while you are not playing, what are you doing to stay ready? What are you doing to show your coaches, like, maybe we can throw this kid 5 minutes? Or are you just going to be miserable there? And they're going to be like, all right, we're writing this kid off. He's not playing a second. We don't even want him in practice, et cetera.
Yeah. In terms of U.S. NCAA programs, are they recruiting Canada heavy? Like, what's that look like? You talked about the portal affecting things now. Is recruitment as what it was maybe pre-COVID, when now we're seeing a lot of talent come out, a lot of guys going lottery, that kind of stuff? Right now, I feel like I can't. Watching college basketball, I can't see, like, there's a clear-cut guy going to get drafted this year for the first time in, like, 4 years, which is kind of crazy to me. Right. I think COVID, like, this might be the COVID kind of, like, era of guys affected by it. But there's still, like, I'm looking at the high school talent. I'm seeing, like, the class of 2028. I'm like, there's a lot of guys that I think have NBA potential in that class, you know? Even 2027, 2026, I'm looking at these classes, right? But what's the level, what's the conversation like? When you're talking to schools now, are they recruiting Canada heavy? Do they want schools? Is there a Shea effect or is there not no effect?
Yeah, I mean, they're still ringing the phones down. Don't get me wrong on that. Like, they want to know who's on the radar, who's not on the radar, who should we look out for in future classes? And, you know, it's three things now, right? Like, those are three questions that they're asking us, and it's on multiple different levels. So they want to write names down, either if they're going to recruit him this year. Is he going to go JUCO so we could follow him? Is he going to go U Sports so we could follow? They want to know that pipeline so they can have this kid's name circled and be like, okay, this is where he is. They're going to continuously follow him. They're going to reach out to him during their high school season as well because they want to build a relationship so that if they call him in 2 years from now, they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is the coach from, you know, X school that called me. So that's always going to be there. I think the Shea effect, I think that's great for a like a fan base level. Like, to understand, like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of kids playing now because, you know, we're seeing Shea doing so well, et cetera. When it comes to a prep school level, like, yeah, it's getting a lot of attention from a Division I school to be like, oh, like, there's a market up here that we could recruit kids from that's undertapped. Yeah, for sure, 1,000%. But are they like, yeah, we're jumping into Canada because Shea is a Canadian, he's actually producing? Nah, I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah. Are schools, like, a lot of schools you see coming, like, when are the periods when NCAA programs come to Canada? What does that look like? Because, like, I'm always wondering, like, was it, I think, end of September, October, you guys had the Battle of the Four usually. Yeah. That was, like, a lot of schools will come down during that. What periods would you say, like, NCAA programs are like, let me prioritize Canada, let me come out and go check out the talent?
It's definitely preseason and then March.
That's it?
That's pretty much it. Because once, like, in season, they'll still pop in here and there, but it's so hard because our game schedules have to not conflict with their game schedules. And, you know, they're traveling everywhere now. It's preseason. They're, you know, flying over the country, playing bye games, all et cetera. And then once league play starts, like conference play starts, it's a wrap. Like, you're not seeing anyone unless, like, they want this kid for sure. They're not coming to see a kid just to come see him. They're going to be like, send me film on him. We'll watch him. And then we'll come down there when we're free. And that's typically when they don't make the tournament.
So what do you say to kids that might get left behind during this process, where it's like you don't have a coach that's maybe advocating for you or doesn't have the connections to these schools and that kind of stuff? What does that look like? Like, for a kid that's kind of like lost in the shuffle, very talented, but lost in the shuffle.
Keep your options open, man. I think, like, when you walk into it, just be like, I want to play D1 basketball. Like, that's how you're going to get left behind. But if you walk into it like, I want to play post-secondary basketball, and understand where the landscape is shifting in terms of making the adjustment, being able to pivot to say, I'm going to go U Sports, develop there, dominate, then maybe I'll bounce out and go whatever. I think the biggest thing, honestly, is that U Sports got to start giving free scholarships.
Let's talk about that.
Like, I don't know if that's something Dave talked about, but
he did. He's like, it's insane that nothing has changed. He's like, he's even like reached out to his own school, I think, and has talked to like, what can we do to just like, but there's no money, you know, right. There's no money. I also like, I think I said on the podcast too, I don't think U Sports has money like that. You right. know, I did some stories for them in the past.
Yeah.
I just don't think they have money.
Right.
For an organization that's like running and has all these schools, you saw McGill too, shut down like a bunch of like their athletic programs, all that kind of stuff. It's sad when you think about it, right? But yeah, is there something you change about U Sports?
I mean, honestly, to be honest with you, I don't know the landscape that much. Like, I just, like, after I left Fort Erie's when I was kind of open to it, and this is kind of weird for me to say because my brother's actually a head coach in U Sports, that I don't watch U Sports basketball. But, you know, I think, like, now that I'm actually in it, I go to his home games, I watch these games, I'm sitting back and I'm like, this is competitive right now. It's only going to get more competitive as time goes, but you also got to give these kids a reason to stay back and not explore a JUCO, not explore a NAIA, D2, D3. Like, we're fighting as a country against like six different entities in the U.S. that are providing these scholarships. What do these schools in the U.S., like these small JUCOs, have that like a University of Toronto doesn't have, that Ontario Tech doesn't have, that does a McGill doesn't have? Like, these are prominent schools that have been around. Ontario Tech has only been around for like 20 years, but McGill's been around for 100 plus years. Like, why are you like cutting down programs? So as far as Dave goes, I haven't heard the podcast yet. Obviously, it hasn't come out yet, but I would probably agree with him in terms of like, they got to step it up in order for us to compete as a country and better ourselves overall.
Yeah. It's kind of just a tricky situation because it's like, you look at that and it's like, people look, view sports as like the last option at times, right?
Yep.
Is that the sentiment you get from kids? Like, when you tell that you might be a U Sports guy, what do kids feel when you tell them? Because I have conversation with kids and it's like, you mention U Sports to them, they'll laugh at you. But I covered U Sports. I know the talent that comes out of there. I've seen the pros that end up playing for the Canadian national team, senior level, you know, that have traveled, that are playing high level minutes, you know, just played the World Cup qualifiers. I just watched Aaron Best do his thing, you know. There's talent in U Sports.
Yep.
But I feel like sometimes kids these days, I don't know what your conversation is like. What does that look like? Because when I talk to kids, it's a slap in the face when I mention U Sports. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I was at 40, it was a slap in my face too. So it's not like the kids are far off either. But I think from that scope, like that scope, like it goes back to like just being able to provide. Ultimately, like us as a program, as prep schools, our job is to get this kid a free education or to get damn near close to it. So if a school is willing to offer something close where the kid's only coming out of his pocket like $2,000-$3,000, like that's something different. But like, if you're telling the kid like in Ontario, here's a $5,000 athletic scholarship and you got to figure out the rest, like the kid's definitely going to go to JUCO. You know what I mean? And a lot of these kids, I think it's an education piece is that programs need to educate them on just playing basketball post-secondary and worrying about life when the ball stops dribbling, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what we're lacking overall.
Yeah. You mentioned, obviously, no money in U Sports. Shout out to the podcast I did with Dave, we talked about it. Some schools, like, they'll provide housing in the East.
Yep.
BC or whatever it is, some schools over there, Calgary, they might pay for your education. Like, there's some stuff. Yeah. Ontario, there's nothing,
no.
Sadly. How much has, though, like, NIL changed? Because now, like, don't know how many OUA guys have like left to go play in the NCAA. There's one guy in Laurentian. I think he's playing some minutes on Kansas's roster. Yeah. And I joke with Dave. I was like, I'd become best friends with Darren Peterson, you know, like, right, you know, yeah. But how much has like the NIL changed the prep school basketball landscape? Do kids think like, I'm about to go make a bag? And how has like that adapted things to where it's like, do kids really get paid? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think it changes a lot. You know, I think like kids now are transactional when they come to a lot of these prep schools. Like, what can you do for me? Because they understand, or not even understand, they hear these amounts that these guys potentially might be making, and they're not looking at their bank statement. They're just like, I could walk up to them and be like, Ben, I'm making like $500,000 at this school. And what are you going to be like? Oh yeah. I mean, if you're at Kansas, you're probably making 500K. But in reality, like, he's probably getting like $5,000, right? I think a lot of these schools don't have money, and a lot of them have too much money. So it's a wide range, right? Like, some of these guys are making six figures, but coming out of high school, man, like, there's guys that are making $5,000 and there's guys that are probably making $500,000. And I mean, we've seen reports of like AJ DeBanza on what he's making potentially off, like, you know, like, we're talking about like millions and millions of dollars, right? And there's also kids that are probably making $1,000, and there's also kids that are just getting a free ride.
What's that like too? Cause some schools will like offer a kid, like, what do you weigh in terms of like, you could go play U Sports, average 20 or whatever it is. And Dave mentioned this too. He had Aaron Rooms. He can go to a NCAA school, potentially be like the 9th, 10th guy on that roster and make money. How do you weigh that conversation with maybe a kid that's like, hey, financially, I might need the money. I might just go sit on the bench. Like, do you have those conversations with guys where it's like, you know what? You might not play, but you can make money. Like, this is how much you could make.
Yeah, so we've been in those situations, like, obviously, at Fort Erie. I think the one thing that we've always maintained is we don't get involved in the money part. We don't talk about it with coaches. Like, our job as a coach, one, getting you a scholarship. Two, talking to you about minutes in terms of long-term basketball play. The financial decision at the end of the day is the families. You know what I mean? I think when we start talking about finances and we start putting numbers in our head as a coach, as a leader in the program, as a stakeholder in this industry, like, we're not putting the kids' best intentions forward in terms of a long-term play, but we're starting to get involved in the financial conversations. And I don't know what a lot of these parents and families' financial situations are. Like, I know mine, and that's it, right? So I think as far as NIL stuff, man, that's a hard conversation to have with a lot of kids and families.
Yeah, and a lot of kids not getting agents. What are your thoughts on that? Because now I see, I'll be honest, everybody wants to be an agent nowadays. Yeah. They think it's sweet. I've had on the podcast. I had Mike George on. I had Mike Simonet on. And like, they talked about it. It's like, you don't really see that much money until X amount of years into this business. How has that changed things too now? Prep school players getting agents, or like people reaching out to your guys and it's like trying to handle or like make sure, like, my conversations with guys that are in it, like, I have relationships with a lot of these agents. I truly think these guys have the best interest of the kid. They want to help them. But also, like, what's that like to for you? Obviously, you say you stay away from it. And they probably reach out to the families. But what's that like when you're seeing a kid now just like, because when an agent gets involved, that's when I think the priority, when it's like, oh, I can make a bag. You know, that's when the shift in mindset things, right? What are your thoughts on that whole thing where it's like now agents getting involved at a very young age?
Yeah,
because that's the game too. Because like NIL opened it up to where it's like guys would usually wait until your potential NBA draft. That's when they contact you or whatever. It's like you're going through college. I see potential. But now, middle school, they're watching you. They're like, this guy has a future. I'm trying to make sure I represent him. Like, what are your thoughts on, is that helping? Is that ruining things in Canada?
I wouldn't say helping or ruining. I would describe it as the same thing as the preps lean. There's established places and there's mom and pops, right? So there's a reason why guys like Mike George, Simonetta, all these guys are able to do what they do is because they have a solid infrastructure and they don't go out there and they're not trying to grab every kid. They try to grab the kids and, you know, convince these kids that, hey, like, I have a backing that can support where I think you can go. And those are better prospects than me walking on the street and being like, I'm going to sign 10 high school guys today because of whatever reason. So
I hope one that sticks, you know?
But the thing is, like, really and truly, like, what are you really helping the kid do. Like, the school is going to offer him whatever money they think he's worth. Like, you're not going to negotiate like $200,000-$300,000 extra for him. Like, there's no way. If anything, schools might get deterred from dealing with kids that have agents that aren't associated with a big agency or have a backing, et cetera, yeah, right? Like, yeah. There are a lot of schools be like, oh, like, who's in a circle? And you're like, oh, like, there's this guy. Like, oh, what's his relation? Like, oh, it's this guy. And they're like, we're not really interested. Like, we did that at Fort Erie, and we're a prep school. You know what I mean? Like, we'd hear, be like, oh, like, who do we have to call? The parents, uncle? Like, what is it? Oh, no, he has, like, this guy, like, who's, like, his brother. No, we're good. Like, we don't want to deal with brothers. Like brothers. You know what I mean? So I think, like, yeah, has it changed it? Yes, for sure, 1,000%. But a lot of the top talent guys that the bigger, you know, quote-unquote fish are getting, like, those are guys that are going to make it and make good money, like you said, like, 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
Yeah. In terms of, like, talent in Canada, I'm, like, looking at the prep school scene. Alberta's having a wave of talent coming up.
Crazy.
What are your thoughts on that? Alberta just coming up out of nowhere. Shout out to immigration. I feel like there's a lot of South Sudanese players, you know. Those are my Africans. I love it. You know, like, what are your thoughts on the talent? That's a hidden spot. I didn't expect Alberta to be punching out talent. But, like, what are your thoughts on that? And then I want to get you sort of – give me your ranking of, like, some of the top provinces. But what are your thoughts on the rise of Alberta?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, like, the national ranking itself, right? Like, when you look at all these international countries that are ranked, and then you look at within Canada – like, Ontario's probably, like, third, to be honest with you.
Really?
I think so. But it goes back to what I said. There's not a lot of competitiveness. The problem with provinces like, let's say, Quebec. Quebec has, for the last 5, 10 years, always been in the shadow. So these guys are just dogs when they come to us. And when you play Quebec teams, Ontario teams go to Quebec, you better be expected to get picked up full court for the whole game. Like, and they're just subbing guys in and out, just full court. And they're just about defense. Like, the competitiveness is there. And I think Alberta's the same way. It's competitiveness over skill. Whereas Ontario's like, we got 12 NBA guys coming out of this province alone. 5 of them alone are from GTA. Like, we could do this. So, like, we're just going to come dribble, dribble, cross, cross. Buddy, it's not going to work. And we've seen it in nationals this year. Like, it's tough out there, man. And I'm from Ontario. I coach Team Ontario. Like, I seen the talent out there. Like, when we're losing to provinces like Alberta that necessarily don't have as much resources as us, like, we're in the hub of Toronto. Canada basketball's here. A lot of the programs like Junior Academy, et cetera, are run out of here. Like, why are we getting run out of gyms as a province? Like, it's because we're just not competitive.
Yeah. Where would you rank it? So you said Ontario's third.
For sure.
So give me your, let's have, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the top four would probably be Alberta, BC, Quebec, Ontario. Am I correct with that? Am I missing something?
Alberta, BC.
Quebec and Ontario.
Oh, I think those are the fourth.
I'm just saying those are the top four.
For sure, yeah.
But what would be your ranking in those four? I still think Ontario is number one, to be honest with you, because I'm looking at the talent and, like, most of the guys, I would say, are playing, and we'll get into the conversation probably next, guys are playing south of the border that are not playing for Ontario sometimes, right? So I kind of give it a, you know, like, I feel like Alberta's more prideful. Like, they're right. Gonna, they're every Alberta guy's playing for that province, you know? So what would you rank? Give me your ranking of those four that I mentioned: Alberta, BC, Quebec, and Ontario.
I love Quebec, to be honest with you. So, like, if it wasn't for the results last year, I would have Quebec number one.
Okay.
Just because of how dog they are. But I think the other problem with Ontario, to be honest with you, is that a lot of the Ontario kids play for the national team. Like, if you look at the makeup of the rosters, like, probably like 7 or 8 guys that are actually in Ontario. So those same guys aren't going to come and play provincials as well. Because again, now you're playing like a 90 game season, more than the NBA, way more than the NBA. So I would have to go Alberta, Quebec, Ontario, and then BC.
That's crazy. I would probably go, that's interesting. I'd probably go Ontario. Alberta is probably next for me. Quebec. And then I'll go BC. BC to me still hidden. There's still some talent there, but I still think it's probably last.
So are you going based off of talent, or are you going based off of like nationals? Who's actually competing and playing?
I'm going both. I'm going both, to be honest with you. But I'm also just like, I think BC fourth for me, because, right, like, what NBA talent have they produced in the last how many years? Like, can we think of a guy? I think there's a Nice who played UPlay. He has potential. He's going to California. Really good player. I think he's Bakari. I think is his last name. Yeah. He's really good. Outside of him, I'm like, I don't really see any like. And then there's some good college guys that play for a few years. Alberta to me, I don't know.
The real problem with BC is they need a prep infrastructure.
So what does that look like in BC? Have you ever seen like what goes on over there?
They just want. So there's two things. One. The problem with BC, real problem, is that all these kids play for their traditional high schools. So when they play for their traditional high schools, they're in a public school system. They're probably only practicing 2-3 times a week, maybe. And then they're playing within like their board, basically. So it's like, this is like OFSA, and that's what the max is. So there's only a certain level these kids are going to get to. The other thing is BC is that they still haven't gone to the model of actually traveling out into Ontario for prep schools until their post-grad year. But at that point, man, as a post-grad coming into Ontario, like you're going to get a rude awakening because these guys have been playing prep basketball for so long. But Alberta has kind of adapted in terms of like, obviously there's Edge, there's WCPA that have these programs between Calgary and Edmonton where guys can stay home and get that prep experience. But BC doesn't have that.
Does BC want it?
From BC doesn't want it. But there are people in BC. There are people in BC that want it.
Yeah.
But the problem is that they can't get the kids out of their high school system.
Why is that? Is it just the kids are like, I want to play for my high school? They love it too much?
I think it's that. It's kind of like how, like here in Toronto, we have the rule, like if a kid plays prep basketball, like they can't play in like their board league. They can't play in offset. If they do decide to come back, like they're banned for like a year or something.
That's crazy.
So I think that's the problem with BC is like those coaches that are in these programs are just not really giving the real to these kids in terms of like, yeah, is the talent there? For sure. Like 1,000%. Yeah. You guys see like guys like Jacob Holt and all these guys that are coming out of BC, Isaac Jack. But again, there's no infrastructure there, right?
You mentioned, obviously, you have Alberta and Quebec, 1-2. You recruited heavily, I feel like.
Yeah.
Those two talents. Yeah. One guy, NPA, has ranked number one in the 2027 class, Deng Angor. I remember you mentioning to him a few years back to me. I remember being in the gym, like, you got to watch this kid.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. Shout out to you. Why was that an emphasis for you? Just like and promise Nalandu, obviously one of the top point guards in his class. Why did you see that as potential? What were you hearing about what's going on in Alberta and getting the talent there and wanting it? Mario, Texas Tech, or another guy, you know? From Alberta, like what did you see there, and like what made you drawn to?
Those so real shout out for Deng is actually Steve Houston.
Okay,
Steve actually seen Deng's mixtape on Twitter.
Wow!
And when Steve was done, because at the time we had two teams at Fort Erie, when Steve was done recruiting for his team and he couldn't take Deng, he was like, "Yo, I think you should look at this guy." One video called Charles, and we're like, "Yo, we got to get this kid for sure." Got on the phone with his dad. Easy recruitment in terms of bringing him over. But that was Steve for sure. Promise, I think like Wes had him on his radar for a long time. And I went out to nationals in wherever Bishop's University is. I don't even know. It's a small town in Quebec. So we went up there and this is a kid that's playing in nationals like, and he's torching the place. I'm talking like 5 feet out from the FIBA 3-point line. Like his kid's just chucking shots. He's got a great dribble. We bring him onto campus the year that we played prolific at home. So it was a crazy environment for him to see. And then Mariel, obviously, you know, I mean, he was like 6'10 sitting on the bench for UPlay when he was in like U15, right? So great prospect there. So I think our biggest thing has always been like grabbing these guys that we don't have to fight with people and just understanding what their potential is. And obviously going back to like our root is development. So we know like we have the coaches, we have the infrastructure to do everything properly. So these guys that we have, can we identify them? Can we get them on campus? Can we show them where we've taken guys that were similar to them and then now prove it with them?
Yeah, it's interesting. I might do a whole podcast just on Alberta, just like the wave of talent coming out.
Crazy, man.
Man, it's crazy. Obviously, a lot of what you do is like you recruit guys to a middle of nowhere at the time, Fort Erie, you know, still middle of nowhere, you know?
Still
is. But a lot of talent went there. I'm guessing two at times, maybe some U.S. schools, prep schools, will see the talent and be like, come to the States, come play over there. I was shocked just how much loyalty, you know, like guys would just stay. Yeah. Because, you know, but sometimes, you know, you'd probably have a conversation with guys like, what's the best fit for you? Should you stay in Canada? Should you stay to the States? What's your thoughts on that? Like, do you think it's needed to go to the States? And there's obviously other prep schools, a lot of Canadians doing their thing in the States, a lot more exposure at times too, right? What are your thoughts on that? Should Canadians like that are dying to go to the States, is it as glamorous? And what do your conversations look like with kids that want to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessary in today's world. And I think the only reason it existed before is because, like, the OSBA started in 2013, for instance. You know what I mean? MPA started in 2016 or 2017. So when you look at it from that scope, like, yeah, okay, like in 2012, 2011, like, guys had to go to the US if they wanted to play and get exposure. I think we're in an environment now where with the portal, with all these different factors, it's not about necessarily getting in front of the coaches and, you know, the coach actually laying eyes on you. It's about the coach knowing who you are, seeing video of you, seeing if you could be on their roster. And that's what we have the infrastructure now in Canada for. Like, the MPA broadcasts every single game. They have a network of 300 coaches that they can call at the NCAA level. They got every U Sport coach that they can send an email out to about players. Like, the exposure is provided in Canada now for sure. So if I was an athlete, it honestly depends on situation. Like, if I'm getting a call from whatever school, I have to really weigh, like, what is a school going to do for me more than an Edge, Fort Erie, Royal Crown? What's being offered? Like, if I could stay in my backyard and play and have my parents see me, et cetera, like, what's the need? And we've seen kids bounce back.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, though, if you say you're the number one prospect, you know? And you feel like you've played or you feel like you've reached your max in Canada. Like you mentioned before that, like the Corey Josephs, Tristan Thompsons, they needed to go to Canada. Mm-hmm. But then Tristan Thompson was considered like probably the best big in his class at that time, right? Goes, what, fourth overall in the NBA draft. For guys that are that talented, that are like a Will Riley, you know, he ends up going to Phelps School, right? That are top of the top potential, like, number one prospect in their class. Jamal Murray might be like the rare occasion. Leonard might be like the rare occasion too. But I feel like Leonard got his buzz like playing in Canada, yeah. You know, obviously playing in the States for a few years, but like for guys that are like that highly touted, do you feel like it's necessary for them to go to Canada to play the competition on a consistent basis? And like, some people want to be like, ESPN is not going to rank you. That's the biggest thing, right? Yeah. You're not going to be ranked by ESPN until you go to the States.
Right. I mean, listen, I used to think like that for sure. I think Leonard Miller changed my perspective on it 1,000%. And before that, it was Josh Primo. Like, we had Josh at Royal Crown and we had Alabama at Royal Crown literally like every other week recruiting him. You know, we had Leonard brought out Calipari to our gym. Like, these are unheard of. Like, if the talent exists, these coaches are going to come out. Look at Isaiah Hamilton. Like, they're coming at 7 a.m. to watch him practice. Like, University of Missouri is coming to watch him at 7 a.m. Like, we're sitting in the gym with the coach watching Isaiah practice. Like, they will come if the talent is here. Again, it goes back to a level of exposure and what it is that a program can actually offer you.
Yeah.
Like, are you going to go to so-and-so prep in Southern Missouri and then live in an attic and play like the public schools around? Or do you want to play in the MPA against the top Canadian talent, against some of the U.S. schools that are being brought up now, like on the girls' side, there's Faith, you know, Faith Family, et cetera. And on the boys' side, there will be that too soon too. But I don't think it's a need for this talent to go down south. Like, the coaches will come to you.
Yeah. I want to end off the podcast asking you a few questions, kind of like fill in the blank type of questions.
Yeah.
Just about prep school. Let me ask you this. The biggest lie families are told about prep school basketball is?
We're going to get you a D1 scholarship.
Is that, how often is that in the pitch?
Everyone's pitch is that. Everyone's pitch is that. The real pitch should be, we're going to get you a scholarship. Yeah. That's what the pitch should be.
What do people not see behind the scenes about the ongoings of prep school basketball?
I think it's the politics that we got to deal with. You know, I think we get calls from parents, we get calls from AAU guys, we get calls from agents, and anyone really that has anything to do with the kid, we're going to get a call about, right? And in that time span, kids are also getting recruited by other schools. Like, you don't know who's reaching out to them on the DM and they're transferring mid-year, et cetera. Like we faced that our first year in Fort Erie. But I think that's what people don't see is the amount of phone calls that are happening outside of the practices, et cetera.
Yeah. That to me too, like the politics in the US, there's a lot of politics. I don't want to make it seem like it's just a can, but like in Canada, everyone knows each other, yeah, which is a sad thing. So like, you know, like you'll hear so much conversations about the politics that goes on and it's like, yeah, it's kind of sad. Like sometimes it's, you know, it impacts like this impacts just, I feel like the growth of certain things, you know, right, in this game. Last thing I'm going to ask you to fill in the blank for, the hardest truth about prep school basketball in Canada is?
It's not easy. It's not easy out there. You know what I mean? So I think like our biggest thing is we don't understand how hard it is to play at that next level. And again, I've been preaching it from the beginning, I think, is like that lack of competitiveness for these kids and programs to understand what it takes. Like even for a program to be like, oh, U Sports is your last option. This kid might not get recruited for you, like to play on a U Sports team. Like yeah. I watch Ontario Tech play now. Like literally there's two kids on that roster that I seen play prep basketball last year. Like that's crazy to me. You know what I mean? Like these kids are playing at the highest level of Canadian basketball and they're just cracking a U Sports roster. Right. So I think like kids got to get familiar with what that landscape is and understand the reality of it and coaches and programs.
People also feel like the Canadian model, the AAU, the US model falls so closely. I've heard talks from people be like, why don't we adopt this European style where it's like you play for, you don't play all the games. Like you mentioned, some guys are playing 60 plus games, right? Where they don't play that many games, but instead they practice 5 times a week, and then they play a game maybe once a week type of thing, or like once every like 2 weeks or something like that, you know? And then maybe now with the CBL, maybe you funnel your talent into playing for a club team like that, you know, where it's kind of like, you know, like the way Luka Doncic right. and those guys came up, right? Sort of like that model. You think Canada would ever get to that? Would ever consider? Are we too closely like intertwined with the US that and the prep scene over there and the AAU basketball culture that would never happen? What are your thoughts?
I think we have to change with times. Like the portal has changed my mind in terms of how I think basketball is going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. I think from the standpoint of where it's going to go, I think you're right. Like it needs to go to that, like playing once. But that also goes to teams have to realize like I don't have to go to the States to play US teams to get exposure. Like we have teams in Canada that don't play in the US and their kids are getting recruited by Division I schools. How is that? Like that's a European model. Like they stay within their little town or whatever and they do what they do. Like even Montverde, look at Montverde, like they play within their state league, which is probably like 10, 15 games. And then they play in the EYBL, which is probably like another 15 games. So they're playing 30 games for the year. But as a Canadian team, I'm playing 18 games here in the MPA. Then I'm playing 18 games in the OSBA. Then I'm playing 18 games with the grind session. Then I'm also going to 4 independent tournaments outside. Like this is almost too much exposure for the kids. When in reality, like you don't need that much. You just need a platform for these kids to play on.
Yeah. What are you most excited about? MPA season, halfway mark. Well, what does that look like for the end of the year? Obviously college coaches come near the end when the finals are. What are you most excited about? What's been the most enjoyable part for this job for you?
I think the most enjoyable job is honestly like dealing with everyone now. You know what I mean? It's not like a hate thing anymore. Like I could get on the phone with Mike and Chris from Royal Crown and we could have a normal conversation. You know what I mean? Like it's not like, you know, the rivalry's gone, yeah. Right? So, but I think overall the biggest thing for me is like going into March. Like I think it's the most exciting time. There's a lot of teams that are strong on paper. There's a lot of teams that necessarily might not be strong on paper because those guys are flying under the radar. But I think the MPA is literally wide open this year in terms of who can potentially win it in March. Yeah. Like we're yet to see Edge play other than one game when they played Royal Crown in October.
Yeah, I got a MVP candidate for you. Yusuf Ahmed, my guy. He's leading all categories in that, man. Shout out to him. Downtown legend, man. I'll be honest, if he doesn't win MVP, I'm gonna have a long talk with you, a long conversation with you. Joe too, I'm gonna hit up Joe and be like, well, what is going on with y'all? But a lot of talent in MPA. Like even if he doesn't win, World Crown, obviously I think they've been dominating what they've been doing. So yeah, I'm excited just to watch. Are you on the All-Canadian committee? What does that look like?
I'm not, no.
I didn't get a call. I'm joking. I don't scout talent. I don't look at these games, but like excited just to see what you guys have been building, your new role. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast, talking about what the state is in prep school basketball. I feel like it's a much needed conversation for parents, for players, people that are in the scene, that I feel like some of this information they know, but some of the hidden gems, the conversations, the politics that we talk about doesn't really get talked about on a platform like this. So I think this is like a much needed conversation. So can't thank you enough, Cav.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah. And yeah, excited to watch this season and follow the NPA and what you guys got cooking on.
Definitely, man. No, it's definitely going to be interesting. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, this has been the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. With my guy, Cav, and we out.